Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, the word is out. They're gonna talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe know all there is to know, from masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned ya. Better watch out, it's gonna ruin the plot. Real spoilers. Real spoilers.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 682, The Batma.
Oh, the Batman.
All you had to do was say Batman.
It's not Batman. No. It's The Batman.
I know, no, but, I always screw the titles.
Right, so I'm like, so all I you said, had to do is actually drop the that is added.
I went with the Batmeh.
Batman 9. Or whatever this is.
So let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. And joining us today via the magic of Zoom Tube is Justin Esquivel from the Epic Film Guys podcast. Hey, Justin, how's it going?
Yeah, I'm wonderful.
We'll fix that.
Insanely excited because it is Batman week. It is the week that I've been waiting for. For many years. So well, I'm excited to be here.
I'm going to make you wait a little bit longer while I do shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, you can get us while you're there. Be sure and follow us so you never miss an episode. And also, don't forget to maybe leave us a review so the people that come along after you know we're worth checking out. You can also, if you would like to engage with us throughout the week, and why wouldn't you, you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, which is called the League of Show Sharers, and we're hoping you'll share an episode with a friend or three, depending on your social media influence. People who were kind enough to share an episode this week: Chris Valls, Travis Tewitt, Chris Magic Man, Heather Sachs, Tammy Sherman Powers, Gabriel Lugo, Ralph Tribble, Tom Dowdy, Chris Williams, Jackson Tom 038.
Perfect.
That's how you say that. We have a Hulk spoiler piece, theater in session film, nostalgia cast, binge movies, Ronnie Castle, Minorities Report, Geek to Me Radio, Chris Wilson, B. Garner, Matt Neglia, Feelin' Film, and Mike, and Oscar. So thank you very much, everybody, for sharing an episode. We greatly appreciate it. And finally, don't forget, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month, you get all sorts of bonus content, you help us out, and we like you more.
And starting on Thursday, Matt Basler and I are going to try to figure out the Texas Chainsaw Massacre timeline. I have no idea if we're going to get it done.
I've never seen a Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
The first one is really all you need to do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this is one Justin will probably be interested in.
I would tend to disagree with that.
Okay.
The Texas Chainsaw Massacre is like the Bush Light of the slasher franchise.
I didn't mean all the movies. I just meant you being a horror guy. That's all.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I personally, my favorite's the second one. I'm very outspoken in this, that as a huge slasher guy, I don't consider Texas Chainsaw a slasher. And I've gone in depth about that on numerous occasions. And it's always a fun debate with people when you get deep and dirty on that. But We did discuss the new Texas Chainsaw on our show recently. It was a lot of fun to talk about because it was pretty divided. But,
that'll be episode 4 or 5, depending on what number timeline we pick.
Well, anyway, enough of that. We're here to talk about the Batman.
Batman.
You can't, even when we're talking about a Batman movie,
I know.
It's not enough for you. You got to go off and do
I got to sit
horror
through Cyrano.
Stuff. Yeah.
I got to, Well, okay. Before we get into it, I think we should address the curmudgeon in the room and see if he liked it or not.
If that title was actually appropriate?
Did you like this movie?
It was okay.
I knew it!
Well, thanks, Tom. We can take it from here. We'll see you next week.
Look, it's certainly better than any of the stuff Zack Snyder gave us.
Fair enough.
Yeah, absolutely.
Agreed.
And so, when you would go to parent-teacher conferences as the child?
Sure.
The teacher's like, he could do better work. I know he's got that's how I felt about this movie. And to me, the biggest complaint about this movie is the establishing shots. He establishes the out of every inch of that
of Gotham.
Yeah. I mean, I'm like, I get it. Like, just fast forwarding to the last scene in the movie is 50 seconds of them driving away on motorcycles.
Sure.
I get it.
Sure.
They're on motorcycles. They're leaving. It's been 3 hours. I am 51 years old and I have to pee.
Interesting.
Get it together, Matt Reeves.
Wow.
Why are we lingering on things? I mean, it just goes on and on.
Now, wait a minute. It's not Matt Reeves' fault that you did not invest in a pee bag that they make for people to go to the movie theaters. So come on. You have to come equipped for the project.
Look, when I have to pee in a 2-hour movie, that's on me. But in a 3-hour movie, no,
I made it through the whole thing, though. 3 times during a movie, and all 3 times I watched this movie, I held it. So
that's impressive. How old are you?
Old are you?
38.
Yeah, your day's coming.
Smallest bladder ever.
At 38, I was fine. Something happens around 45 where they flip a switch and you've got to pee every 4 minutes. Now, that being said, I made it through the whole movie.
Okay. Good job.
I paced myself. I didn't drink for a week and a half before
I went to the bathroom right before it started.
Yeah.
That was the trick.
I held it up until
both times.
Yeah.
I saw both times, no bathroom breaks. That's the thing with this movie. If that's not your thing, if you don't want those establishing shots to linger and all that, I totally get why you'd think it felt really long because I ate up every morsel of those shots.
I do agree that the runtime is a little ridiculous.
It doesn't have to be for the story. I
just think that this movie would have worked so much better if they'd have tightened it up by 20 minutes.
Maybe. I would agree with that.
Technically wise, it would have worked, and I can admit that. But with it being 3 hours, and Greg Fraser is the cinematographer
Did he do any of the Apes movies?
No, he did Rogue One,
which is
a gorgeous, best-looking Star Wars movie of all Star Wars movies. He did Rogue One. He did Zero Dark Thirty. He did Dune, a little movie you might have heard of.
Yeah, it was all right.
Beautiful-looking movie. I mean, that's nominated for all these Oscars. Greg Fraser being one of the best cinematographers out there, when he gives me those shots because I love his cinematography so much, I'm just sitting there eating it up.
I do. I think that is the thing that I now... Let it be known, I thought this movie was fantastic.
Yeah.
I think this is probably my second favorite Batman movie of all time. The first one will never be topped. It's Mask of the Phantasm. That will never be taken off the top.
Yeah.
There's nothing.
Like where you could say, maybe this movie was a little long. Like Phantasm doesn't have any complaints with length.
No, I think Phantasm,
animation style, voice acting, story. I mean,
characterization, everything.
Yeah.
This is number two.
That's amazing. So you're saying this is the best live action Batman movie ever made?
Yeah. I think, you look back at 89's Batman, and it doesn't age as well. I think it's a good Batman movie. I think everybody involved in that is into that movie. I think for what Batman became post 89 Batman, that set the template.
You needed
Frank
that
Miller,
Batman
I guess,
to get to here.
Yeah, yeah, Frank Miller kind of sets the template in the comics, and then Tim Burton takes that, but we need 89's Batman to get to here.
And I think Batman 89 is a masterpiece.
It doesn't matter if technically
is it as good as this one? I mean,
nope.
It's not in this. I mean, it was made a long time ago. There are other limitations, but
it's kind of hard to compare when you look at the difference in filmmaking in 1988 compared
totally
to
right.
now.
You're totally right.
That's what I'm saying. So even saying it's not the best, that movie I think is incredible.
I think The Dark Knight is a really good story. Mm-hmm. I think it's a really good. You take Batman and the Joker out of that movie and just have it be,
and it still works.
To have it be Christian Bale against Heath Ledger,
yeah,
like
that's
kind of
like
works.
A Heat
so it's
thing,
not
right?
entirely a Batman.
Isn't it like Michael Mann?
Yeah, kinda.
Heat?
Yes. So it's not
I think you could say, do the same with this movie, though.
I don't know.
Yeah, this is Seven. This is Seven of
the
Batman.
That's the beauty of it. Exactly, right. Yeah. That's why they're both so good, Joe, to your point.
But
that
I think there's enough comic book influence in this one where there's not really that much comic book influence in The Dark Knight besides Batman and the Joker.
I think in the same way, though, that you needed Batman 89 to get to the dark and gritty Batmans we get now. That I think you couldn't have this movie without Dark Knight.
Agreed. Totally agree with that.
But I think this one works in the same way. And it's definitely going for more grounded. And it's got like a 70s kind of vibe to it. It's very...
A little bit of Jigsaw in there.
It's very French Connection, the conversation kind of a thing.
Yeah, I felt all that for sure.
So, Justin, the long-anticipated opinion here. So, where did you land on it, sir?
Oh, yeah. No, I was just like holding it in like a... Never mind. I was going to say something.
Like a 51-year-old?
holding it all week, baby. No, it's... My first viewing when I went to the press screening a couple weeks ago or whatever, I kind of walked out not really knowing exactly how to feel about it. I mean, I knew that so much of it really like knocked the wind out of me.
Sure.
But it wasn't until I saw it a second time where I just... When it's Batman for me, I really need to open up. And I let it just hit me. Like, I just laid on my back and said... Have at it, baby. And when it did, I really got so invested in this version of Gotham, this version of Batman. It gave me pretty much every single thing that I wanted out of the movie. The aesthetic, it brought it back to more of a gothic, really darker, yet semi-realistic Nolan take on what Gotham City could be. I honestly, after three watches, this is definitely up there as one of my favorite live-action Batman movies of all time. And Pattinson may be right there next to Michael Keaton as my favorite cinematic Batman. It's hard to say. I need more time for that kind of ranking right now. But overall, it gave me... I mean, it checked all the boxes. Car chase? Check. Batman beating up bad guys? Check. Really good story? Check. Amazing villain? With a brilliant performance by an amazing actor, check. I mean, I guess that's a Batman movie for you, you know? But it also gave something fresh and different that we hadn't seen, and that's something that's been discussed so much lately is that whole detective noir aspect that we've never really seen out of a Batman movie, and that really, really cemented for me why this movie is really special.
Yeah, I think the closest we ever got to a true, like, detective story is The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Is that, trying to work... the multiple bullets into the bricks and trying to figure out like things like that. I think there's a little bit of detectiveness in the original Batman where he's breaking down the formula, the Joker formula. Like there's a little bit of that. But yeah, I agree. I think that has always kind of been the miss about Batman that I don't think anybody ever captured until now where you see him working ciphers. And
I read an interview with Robert Pattinson where he was like, I didn't realize he was the world's greatest detective. Like he did. He's like, I didn't know that was an aspect of the character.
And right. So as not a comic fan, you just have the movies and they don't play up those detective skills.
They never do.
It's funny. My dad said that yesterday when I took him to see it because he'd never read a comic ever. And I said that. I was like, well, he's a detective. And he's like, what, really? I was like, I know, Dad, that you know your history with Batman is the 66 show.
Yeah,
I get it.
He still figured
out in that show, too.
But you know, it was called Detective Comics.
Remember that DC and DC Comics?
Yeah.
Detective Comics.
People seem to forget that, yeah.
And that's even in the comics, they kind of got away from it for a while. Like, it wasn't... Yeah. Now they've kind of gone back to, like, the Detective Comics is the detective story of the Batman comic is the superhero comic.
I think another really neat thing about this film is how many influences it draws upon.
Lots.
Not just from other movies, not just from comics, which is the no-brainer because it's a comic book character, but the video games. There's influences from Arkham when he that first fight outside the subway, the way he's hitting and parrying people.
Sure.
Feels a lot like Arkham. The suit closer resembles something to Arkham than some of the other
towards
stuff.
Towards the end,
some of the storyline stuff is actually drawn from Arkham. So they take inspiration from multiple comic books, multiple movies, multiple video games. So as a Batman fan, as someone who's played and watched and read all these things, to see one film come in and put them all together but not feel like a mishmash, like nothing is tonally jarring about this film.
No, everything works.
But they seek inspiration from all these different mediums where it really is a masterful puzzle to put together that they nailed. I mean, Matt Reeves, the cinematographer, the actors, everyone comes together in this. And
you know, there are I struggle with this version of the Riddler, and it's not because it's a bad performance. It's just this isn't the Riddler that I've ever seen, right? Like, he's in the Riddler in the comics and the TV show and the
He's always kind of been like a goofball. Would you like a version of the Joker that doesn't kill people?
Yeah, right.
He's like Joker light.
Exactly.
And I kind of like that version. This did kind of feel like we want to do the Joker without doing the Joker.
And we want, yeah.
Yeah, because actually Riddler does take on some of those things. So you think about, normally you think about the dichotomy of Batman and Joker creating one another
right.
and feeding each other. And at the end of this movie, spoilers, but Riddler actually says that when he's talking face to face with
Batman.
You're
my partner, it's supposed to be you and me.
Well, he says, I understand that the mask is the real person.
Right.
He says that, and that's something that Kevin Conroy has always mentioned. And I interviewed him about Batman the Animated Series, and I posted a short clip on Twitter about it. But he really gets into the psychology the character and where he studied and thought about to come up with the character, like his performance.
Voice. And they talk about that in the comics.
Oh yeah,
about
sure.
how like the Bruce Wayne's the mask,
right?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
that's a pretty common theme.
Yeah, the glasses are the mask for Clark,
right?
So and I love that, but that's someone that studied and understood the comic books, and I think that's where this movie ultimately. It really passes the test. It's not just good looking. The action isn't just good. The characters are good suit, all that stuff that you need. But what's most important is that this movie feels like someone that understands the character.
Which is why I'm having such a hard time with so much of the Twitter sphere saying that Matt Reeves hates the character.
Yeah,
of
I
Batman,
don't get that.
Not understand.
Because
I don't
they,
understand
because they
that.
Don't understand the character. You know what I'm saying? If you've read as many comics, watched the movies, played the games, if you do that, and then you watch this movie, you're like, he just pulled in the best things. Like, people online, there's been a lot of hyperbole out there, right? And so
good
a lot
word.
Of people,
good word, by the way, good
a,
word.
Yeah, a mm-hmm. lot of people online have said that this is the best Batman ever. This puts Nolan's movies to shame.
No,
but
I mean, like, a movie can be good, and the other movie can still
yes,
also
yeah,
be
exactly,
good.
Jesus. Exactly,
right. So that's my point, yeah. which is crazy because, like, I said recently online, like, I love the Nolan film. So, like, just to get that out of the way. But a lot of people are going to like that extreme and this, that, and the other, and they say this is the best. And then other people that are reasonable, like our friend Aaron at Feel and Film, he says, stop doing this. You can't say that this Batman is the only one that's gotten the character right because you have nearly a century of things
yeah.
that evolve and change and whatever.
And it wouldn't have gotten it right without the DNA of, like you said
yes.
perfectly earlier, everything else that came before. And I can feel elements of so many of the other movies and stories in this movie. It just feels like all of it melded together yeah. in this awesome version.
Yeah,
but
so
it's not really Batman until you get Batmite. I think we all know.
But so
I'm
if
a
I
fucking Bat-Hound in the next one, man.
Right.
So if I can offer the other side of that, so yes, it's not that this is the only movie that's gotten him right, but this movie gets the best Batman stories right.
I think it's that's
the
probably
favorite Batman stories right. Year One, A Long Halloween,
even says Hush,
which I was
screen.
Like, come on.
Oh, there's yeah, Easter like, eggs for days yeah. in this movie.
And I think. They even tap into Selena. Oh, what was the name of that book? It was Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale. The when in Rome.
Yep.
There was a miniseries, but the guys that did the Long Halloween and Dark Victory also did a Selena Catwoman miniseries, and that brings in the one of the twists of this movie. I think it was in that one.
A lot of people use each other's stories, but that's the thing, though. So we're pulling in stuff from comics, from games, and all
yeah.
that, like we said already. So I think that's where I think what people are trying to say is that the majority consensus of like favorite Batman stories, favorite characterization, look, all that, this movie nails that. They somehow pieced together the best of all of it and made it feel like
you know
one
we
piece.
Didn't get to see in this movie, and I was kind of not kind of super happy we didn't see it.
Boobs.
Well, no, I'd be unhappy
oh,
if I
fair.
Didn't see that.
That's fair.
The origin.
There's
oh, no
yeah,
origin.
Right.
And I was like, thank God.
Yes.
I don't
I
need
thought
to see.
For a second we were going to get it when they, and I was just like, oh, again.
When he goes into the room and looks at the pictures, I was like, yeah. no, please don't have
but,
a flashback.
Yeah,
and
right,
here,
right.
masterfully crafted by Matt Reeves, you know, tell me about what happened without telling me what happened. yeah. You see his hurt and pain through seeing another child lose his family
right.
in a similar way. They said it all
yeah.
without showing us one bit of it.
You know what? That's talking about that real quick, and we'll. You know, we're not gonna do this beat by beat like we usually do. We're gonna probably jump around.
Yeah.
One of the things that they never really got with the Batman movies was his kind of like heart, right? Like it's either super goofy with George Clooney and Val Kilmer, or there's no heart whatsoever. There's a heart with a lot of humor from Michael yeah. Keaton.
Kilmer's
There's,
not super goofy, but Clooney
Kilmer is like that.
He's just goofy enough to get us to the goofiness of Clooney.
That's Art Rodin's Dr. Meridian. Yeah.
But my thought process is Kilmer's completely not goofy. See, Kilmer is a pro, and Kilmer's playing that so straight in a movie that Schumacher wants to be silly.
But that scene when she kisses him, when she says, I can't do this, I'm in love with Bruce Wayne, and he turns around and has that doofy smile. That's ridiculous. That is ridiculous.
But overall,
hey, he smiles in returns too. So.
Yeah. I know.
He's playing very serious.
It's very
but
weird.
But he's playing. Anyway, go
yes,
on. I'm
but
just, yeah.
Him giving that kid, like when we see the son of the mayor, or was it the mayor? Yeah. For the first time. And he gives him like a head nod. Mm-hmm. It's super subtle, but it's just like a little head nod. Yeah. And then when he's
look at his
offering his hand or holding that child and carrying a child mm-hmm. out from this catastrophe. I think that is one thing that has never really been touched on, right? Like Dick Grayson in Batman Forever is a 21-year-old. Mm-hmm. Like, so you get like an antagonistic relationship, but you don't get that father-son relationship, where in this one, you definitely get a lot. He's a broken man at this point.
You know
right?
where the heart is? And not to say it isn't in any of the comics at all, but where the heart really is that animated series.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You get a lot of heart between Bruce and the Bat family.
Yeah.
And about
who's the Justice League series where he's got where he has to sit down with the kid.
Yeah.
From the Royal Flush Gang.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Yeah.
The thing is, and all the credit in the world to Kevin Conroy, because he's always been my Batman. I think is the Batman. He's classically trained. He's trained at Juilliard. The guy understands a performance. Like, he's studying the characters, and that's why I talk about it, the psychology that he's always talking about, because the guy didn't just go, how do I make a deep voice? He's like, who is Batman? What's his psyche? All that stuff.
Look at Christopher Reeve does the same thing.
Yeah. I think that all that
Christopher Reeve is an awful Batman.
He's a terrible Batman. You're right.
Yeah.
I gotta tell you, though.
You take that back.
Give me that movie.
He's the Batman from Speeding Bullets.
Hey, now. Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, I was like, wait a minute, but you weren't making a joke.
Oh. No. That's a real thing. I love Matt's my favorite one shot. But yeah, so all these things are true. And I think that they come together and they make the Batman just an incredible thing that I we've never seen. It's hard because a lot of people say we've never seen a Batman like this, and I know that people don't really care for it. Like, of course we have. It's Batman. He punches a bat, whatever. But something feels so unique about this because of the tone, how it feels like a Fincher movie, the detective work that we said we haven't seen on screen before. It really does feel unique.
Yeah, there's also a graphic novel by Jeff Johns and Gary Frank called Batman Earth One, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of that here too. Like the idea that maybe the Penguin had in that book, the Penguin is Oswald is the mayor of Gotham, and Thomas is making a run for mayor, and he is killed in the process. Mm. So it's all like there are elements of all of this stuff. I mean, Selina Kyle in this looks just like the Selina Kyle from year one. She's wearing the same outfit, same hairstyle, same everything. So they pull. Yeah, you're right. They pull a lot of stuff, and they finally find like that perfect wavelength to get a comic accurate Batman while keeping him in the movies.
Another thing I liked about this is this takes place in year two of Batman.
So there's already relationships established.
You get an early Batman that, you don't have to have the origin. Relationships are established.
And he knows what
Gordon
he's doing.
Have been working together. But also, he's not a seasoned Batman. So
he's good, but he's not great.
Right.
He takes hits. He
doesn't know Spanish.
Yeah.
So it's very weird.
Yeah.
He messes up the paragliding thing, right? Like, he takes those hits, and I like
he's him. Nervous when he stands on top of the...
His mouth... wide open. He's scared.
In another Batman movie where he on the gargoyle, it's always like this majestic, like, I'm a badass and overlooking the city.
Right,
and
right.
Here he's like a little bit of pee comes out.
Man, I hope this works.
You know what that is?
I was like, whoa.
Man, that's Luke throwing the lightsaber behind his head in The Last Jedi. That's people that only know Batman who's a badass on top of a building.
Sure.
And that's them going, that's not this Batman.
Yeah.
He will be. But it's a different story. It's a different point in his life. And so I think that's really refreshing. And I think this is a movie like a couple that I've seen are The Last Jedi, because it was so different.
Sure.
And Solo, the Han Solo movie. You go into these films, part of franchises that you love, right? Like, we've all grown up with Batman and we love him, and Star Wars is the same thing. And so you go into these movies expecting a certain thing, and when they pull the rug out from under you, do something different, your first reaction is like, that's not the story I know. That's not the character I know. But when I went back and watched The Last Jedi again, I liked it more.
I guess that's a good point, because you don't know that Luke. We don't know that. The Luke in The Last Jedi, we don't know who he is, because we've only seen him up until, you know, Return of the Jedi.
So you went into The Last Jedi expecting the Luke you knew.
I mean, I didn't because I read a bunch of comics and books and stuff. Okay. So I knew an older Luke, but I see your point.
You know how like the internet can be frustrating because it feels like it's always contradicting itself with arguments. It feels like the same people that are telling you like you need to lose weight or the same people that tell you you're too thin when you lose weight.
Right.
And it's not that. But because it's different people, but it feels like that, right?
Sure.
And when people talk about like this isn't the real Batman or what, and the problem is that there's been almost 100 years of comics,
totally,
and there's so many different incarnations and versions of Batman that it's like, so there is no real version. It's been whatever version we have today. Yeah, it's been reinterpreted so many times that there is no real version. And so if you don't like a Batman movie, it's like the weather in St. Louis. Wait 5 minutes, it'll change.
That's exactly
like you'll
right.
get another one.
Right.
So
it's
like,
always been a personal preference thing for sure.
Yeah. So
and he's always looked different, right? Like you can either do the Bob Kane or the Bill Finger Batman, or you can do the Norm Breyfogle Batman.
Yeah, you don't want to do the Bob Kane. You've seen that Batman.
One. It's real bad. Yeah, real bad.
You don't want to see that one.
For me, like my Batman growing up was Norm Breyfogle. Like Norm Breyfogle or he's really the one that I think of the most.
I love Neil Adams.
Neil Adams was a great Batman, but he was the 70s Batman. I wasn't reading comics in the 70s. Norm Breyfogle
had those crazy horns. they were like crazy tall.
Yeah. They were like as long as his arm.
My absolute favorite design ever, probably.
He's like, he draws a great Batman, but Norm Breyfogle's Batman was the one that I was like, what is like, he is almost Todd McFarlane-esque, like in the way that he would draw his cape, and like there's a all kinds of great
it's
stuff.
It's like your favorite Bond or your favorite SNL cast.
That's who Batman is, right? Though. Like, Batman is just another version of Bond.
Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, right. Well, it's not even Bruce Wayne, but like you get a different actor, you get a different director, a different writer, different stories.
Yeah.
So
that's why I think it's important to go in with an open mind, and why the first viewing of a movie, like I did when I went to Solo, and I'm like, man, that's not Harrison Ford. And then I watched it again, and I'm like, you know what? This is the character they've cast to play Han Solo. No one else is Harrison Ford. And I had a lot of fun with that movie. I saw it 3 times in theaters, and the third time I had the most fun, right?
Sure.
This movie I saw the first time, and I liked, like Justin said, I knew I liked it. I came out of it, and I go, I really liked it, but I have to let that sit because I've never seen anything like it. And then I thought about it for several days, and then I just saw it for a second time yesterday, and I left it and absolutely adored every moment. Like, it's different, right? So it took me that second viewing to let it sit to where I was like, okay, the first viewing is let's figure out what they're doing here because this is different, and I expected one thing. And the second time knowing it, then I paid attention to all the little details, all the Easter eggs,
there's a lot.
And all the set design and all the attention to detail they paid in making Gotham feel like this grungy, dirty Gotham that the comics have always said it is. And you see
Well, they definitely, you know, obviously the theory is that it's been, you know, Metropolis is New York during the day, Gotham is New York during the night. Can't really say that it's not New York when the center place is called Gotham Square.
Square Garden.
Gotham Square Garden. Well, they made their arena. Like, well, okay, we're in New York. That's what we are now. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I've always thought of Chicago. Like, Chicago is Gotham, and New York is Metropolis, and like California, you know, coast cities in California and stuff like that. But
see, Gotham's New York, Bloodhaven's New Jersey.
I guess you could say that, sure.
One of the most important things about this movie, and it's the first time for me at least since the Burton movies, where I felt completely transported to a different place.
Yeah, yes. I would agree with that completely.
This is a Gotham that is terrifying. You do not want to walk down the street at night when it's dark.
That opening sequence is a horror movie.
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
It's incredible.
I mean, as a big horror fan, that all works so well for me. But I also liked that it melded together, obviously, shots of a real city. Mm-hmm. But when you're on the streets and stuff, like the Iceberg Lounge within and outside, it felt like Batman mm-hmm. to me. When you looked at the architecture and the style, it's gothic. There's a little bit of Art Deco in there, and it brought me back to that, which to me is Batman. I love the Nolan movies.
89's the only other movie that feels like that.
Exactly.
89 is so Gotham and not anything else.
89 is Gotham turned up to a 11.
But what I mean is that you don't watch 89 Batman and say that's New York.
Right.
When you watch Nolan movies.
I watch 89 Batman and say that's a set.
Yeah, which is Gotham. Yes. But yeah,
but I mean, it's cool looking, but it doesn't. But there's nothing about it that looks quote unquote real.
But like with Nolan, what your point, like you, when they're walking down the street or they're doing, it's Chicago.
We're in St. Louis. Chicago's 5 hours away.
That was my point I was getting to, is that he set it up perfectly in Begins when you had the narrows. It was like sets and it felt like Gotham to me. But then when he's just driving down the streets in Chicago, I'm like, that's just a regular city. That to me was not Gotham in the way that I viewed it. And here they've brought it back to something more along the lines of what we saw Anton first do in 89. But also still had that Nolan influence. Like, it's a real city. There's a real subway. There's like, it's a living, breathing behemoth. It's a character. And that's one thing that the Nolan films did not have to me. Gotham did not feel like a character.
Gotham,
like,
yeah, and Gotham should be a main character. And it's like Selina says at the end of the movie when the bat signal goes on and, you know, she says, you're already spoken for. Like, Gotham City is a person. It's his.
They get married in the comics. Like, that's a whole thing. Sorry, Tom, I don't even read.
You've got
a stack of comics that you haven't read in 20 years.
Yeah, you're
fine. Okay, good. Superman died, by the way. I don't know if you knew that. So, like, that whole...
How's his dad doing?
Great.
Okay.
Wait, which one?
Yes. The thumb drive.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Thumb drive.
Oh,
man.
God, I love that. I was laughing during that. People that say this movie has no humor because it's dark, there's a lot of humor.
Jeffrey Wright is... Look, I think Gary Oldman will always be the best Commissioner Gordon. This is a very different Commissioner Gordon, but I like it. I'm into it. But I do like that he calls him man. Which I just thought was weird. I was like, hey, man.
The second time I watched the movie, I realized, yeah, he never calls him Batman. He's like, hey, man.
Hey, man. He always calls him man.
The only person I think that actually uses their superhero name, quote unquote, is the Riddler.
Oh, sure.
He identifies himself as the Riddler, but like Batman never calls himself
the Vigilante vigilante
and like
vengeance
and
this.
It's like the media calls him the Batman. Yeah.
Right.
Like, and I know some people don't like the and I will say when I first started reading comics, the idea of calling him the Batman irritated
me. It's from the comics.
But
and I love it because it makes him a myth.
Batman is what other people call him.
Yes.
Right? Like,
yes.
And that, which is why this movie's
called
that.
Yeah, he's Batman. His name is Batman, not the Batman.
Right.
They
says
call
it on
him,
his American Express.
But no, you nailed it. I mean, yeah, it's other people saying the Batman. And that just makes it sound like a terrifying demon lurking in the shadows. The boogeyman.
You're absolutely right.
Batman,
that opening scene when the
second
scene. Oh yeah,
because
the opening scene
is Riddler watching
is the murder
of the mayor,
and that's, I will say, that's the other thing I like is I know most of these characters' names, right?
Like, what I didn't like about that opening scene was that it was written as if the bad guys, the gang that he's fighting,
the Jokers.
It's one version of. They took influence. They look like Arkham goons from the games. They look like the Joker gang. They look like the mutants from the
kinda,
Dark Knight.
Yeah, Returns. I can see that.
There's a lot of influence.
But I didn't like the fact that they seem to have no idea who he is.
Yeah, when he walks out of the shadows, they're like, "Yeah, man, let's go."
Right.
When everybody else is like, "We're gonna bounce."
He's all over the news.
Right.
Like he's, it's year two of Batman. So like,
so he's already breaking arms and smashing
so
skulls.
If you're a street criminal, I'm thinking the guy who's been out there, dismembering street criminals is probably on your radar.
Yeah, right. Well, we even get
and there
that,
are
right?
multiple lines in that scene where they clearly don't understand who he is or what they're up against,
right.
Which I don't buy.
But what I like is that when he's journaling, and so that after
I got to real quick the monologue, like I was like, dude, this is like Frank Miller, like that's what this is. Like,
that's incredible. Him reading the journal.
Yeah,
that he's writing.
I know we kind of bag on Zack Snyder. Sorry. For anybody that likes those movies, but like
I'm not.
Yeah, I do, but that's okay.
Okay. I'm not going to bag on it too hard, but like the journaling and is the Alan Moore thing, the Frank Miller, that thing is actually, that whole idea is out of comics. That doesn't exist anymore. The inner monologue,
right?
It used to be.
That's what you're reading. The inner monologue.
Well, you get bubbles, and it was like the writer is telling you like what's going on in that world, and then you'd get thought bubbles of what's going on in their head. The thought bubbles are gone. It is all like they've replaced the creative writing with thoughts. So like getting that all I could think of was like him hunched over in his cave journaling, and the journaling is a thing that I think has always kind of been a thing where there are journals upon journals of like all of the things that Batman has done.
And what he says in that scene that I really like, that I think kind of answers what Tom is talking about, which is speaking to the how has not everyone ran into him yet, is he talks about it. He says, I have to be selective. I can't be everywhere at once. So you see all the criminals, but the ones that know who he is, when that signal goes on, the guy robbing the convenience store is scared crapless.
Right.
Right. You see all the other people graffitiing. They drop their cans and run because he could be behind any of those shadows at any moment.
Yeah.
And he chooses to come out of the shadows.
Even the gang, though. I mean, the young guy who's supposed to be getting initiated here by beating up this innocent person looks up at the sky. He sees it. He knows.
That actor plays Tim Drake on Titans. So he could be...
I jokingly said that. I was like, well, there's your Robin.
So there could be... It could be him leaving that gang and becoming... You know,
Dick. Not Dick, but
well, yeah.
Tim.
Yeah. And...
Because, sure, let's jump to the third Robin.
I know, right?
Yeah,
rather
but,
than take care of the other two. But the one who we never talk about.
But when he says things like hush, when he sets up, when he puts an act here, that doesn't mean they will.
Right.
No, I know.
He's gone on record, just to be more specific, that last scene of the almost last scene of the movie with Joker and Riddler when they're in.
I think you mean Arkham Inmate. That's what it says in the credits.
No, Reeves said that.
No,
it,
I know.
Yeah. But I mean, you're right in the credits. But when you have that second to
that
last.
That was so it wouldn't pop up on IMDb.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, right.
But Reeves says, yeah, that's the Joker, and they're in there. But Reeves said, absolutely not. This is not setting up the next movie.
Which is absolutely ridiculous.
It's just...
It frustrated me so much watching this movie and going, why have him in it at all?
Yeah.
If you're not going to do anything. And we've already had him so much.
He explained it, though. He wanted to, wanted audiences to know this is an established Batman, like in the year two, people are established, and that also... The Rogues Gallery, they're out there. Like
it's
they could
so
be
big.
They could be out there at any moment for any story, but there's a lot of criminals, like Batman says in the beginning, and there's only so much time. So the point is he's not saying this is a setup for the next movie, like finding a Joker card, you know, on the crime scene. This is just showing this is an established Gotham and they're all out there. I just want to set that.
Well, and he also, I read an interview where he said that he's not the Joker yet.
Well, he definitely looked like the Joker.
He looked like it and sounded like it to me.
But he's in the process of becoming
I guess that's
the
true because, I mean, if we're only in year two, like the Joker, you know.
They've already crossed paths.
Yes. Which is fine, right?
Like, Batman probably put him in there.
Right.
But I think to Matt Reeves's point, the Rogues Gallery is so massive. There's so many stories to tell. I got to tell you, if I can get like a 15-year moratorium on the Joker in a movie... I'm fine with it. Like, you can do Freeze. You can do Two-Face. They've set up Two-Face, kind of.
Joker should maybe be the last one that Reeves does. You know what I mean? Like, you can do it, but like, yeah, don't do it second.
Look, Leonard Skinner doesn't open a concert with Freebird.
Thank you.
Right? Like, it's...
And build to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. So I just think, I mean, you get that one scene. He said there was a second scene he filmed.
I thought there was more to that.
Which I'm like, glad they cut, because it didn't sound like it made any sense to anything.
Yeah,
he
said it was redundant. There was already a scene that established the same thing. But there's another scene where Batman goes to Arkham. It was a Hannibal Lecter thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's taking so many inspirations. Batman would have gone to Arkham and would have talked to this character played by Barry Keogh. He was in Eternals.
Yeah, I think he's a cool
he's really
choice
great.
To... be the Joker.
Yeah, I like it.
But we get there.
But there's a scene where he goes and does the Hannibal Lecter thing where he's like trying to get information of how the Riddler would think. And like, in theory, that's a really cool thing, bringing in other film influences like he's already done. But he said in the end, there are other things in the movie that establish the Riddler's mindset and stuff. It just wasn't necessary.
Yeah.
But he did a test screening, and he did screenings with the Joker and Riddler scene and without it. And the one with the Joker in it got higher ratings every time. So people dug that he made an appearance, but also not to read into it. He just left it in to establish the villain.
But I think the GA, Kevin, is going to have the hardest time with that. See, we get that. But, you know, all the Joe Schmo moviegoers in there are going to go, oh, the Joker's in the next one. So they're going to expect that. So I have to understand Reeves' mindset, but also you have to look at it from a broad viewpoint, and that so many people, oh, the Joker's in the next one. Because that's what they're used to.
That is true.
And not everyone's going to go read those interviews like, oh, it's not a Marvel thing.
You know what's interesting, though? And Reeves is an auteur. He clearly did whatever he wanted on this movie.
And I don't, I mean, good.
So,
absolutely.
But so Reeves did that because it was, I mean, not saying he just did it because of test audiences, but I mean, he filmed those scenes and wrote those scenes
because he wants to do it.
Yeah.
I almost wonder if the studio was like, you need a Joker.
You gotta. You need to put him in there. Yeah, right. He's our moneymaker.
Could
like,
be.
Our the last time he was in a movie, it won an Oscar.
Right.
You know. So and it's
well. No, that's not true.
Not this Joker. Right. Didn't the other one won an Oscar?
No,
didn't
I meant the last time the Joker was in a movie would have been like Suicide Squad.
Oh, that's true.
And it won an Oscar.
Well, yeah, for like, Oscar. For like sound editing. Yeah.
Makeup. Yeah.
Makeup.
But yeah, I
talk about makeup.
Yeah, this is
Colin Farrell in this movie.
That's the one thing that we haven't touched on yet. Incredible. And I like there have been so many. Well, there's been two other version live action penguins, right? One is the
Burgess Meredith,
which is the very comic accurate for the time. Great.
That whole Rogues Gallery, Frank Gorshin, Burgess Meredith,
yeah,
Cesar Romero.
Cesar Romero is the Joker.
Eartha
oh my
Kid, Julie
God,
Newmar. Eartha,
yeah, the two cat women.
Three,
I mean,
there's another one, but
oh, is there a third?
There's
one?
There's three. Yeah,
okay, but. They were so good, and they
Lee Meriwether.
That's the first name I was going to say. Yeah. They did such a good job bringing the comics at that time to life.
Yeah,
and doing the silly thing and all. Yeah. I mean, I love that whole series.
I have that like the figure from the Superpowers collection looks just like it.
And then you have Danny DeVito,
who
is
like
a
wackadoo.
Yeah,
like it's
that's Burton. That's
bonkers.
Full Burton.
That's all Burton all the way. Yeah. This
I love
is
it so much.
Oh, it like
I love it as
super...
a I love it as a Burton thing. It's
wait, are you a Batman Returns like super fan?
This was discussed last time we were
like a year ago.
Yeah,
we don't actually have to guesting on a Batman Returns episode later this evening. So,
oh, yeah, nice.
That's what I'm always willing to sit and talk about.
You and Ryan L. Terry would get along very well.
Yeah.
No, I know. That's one of the first things he told me when he saw the movie. He literally messaged me and said it wasn't Batman Returns, and that's why he didn't like
so
it.
Crazy.
And that's how I read it.
He
like,
so
okay,
much
dude.
Loves that, and I get it.
I love that movie too.
It's
but
so,
yeah.
But yeah, so
but
we get
this,
two.
I
very...
gotta tell you, this is my favorite version of the Penguin. Like
because
this
is
great.
The more modern Penguin's a mobster. Right, he's not a joke anymore.
He's
right?
not a joke.
Like he
well,
is.
I guess the character on the show, I guess, kind of does this. Doesn't he have kind of like a turn?
Yes, they did this. A lot of credit to Gotham. I think I talked about this online with Justin. Like Gotham starts off rough, but really, as you watch the show, there's a lot of good stuff.
I got
there.
To that Two-Face episode, and I was like, I'm done.
But they do this characterization. You see the Penguin come from a lowly guy up to a mob boss.
Yeah,
and so they get that characterization right, and this jumps right into the mob boss character where he's the right hand man of the biggest mob boss out there.
I gotta tell you, I've never said his name right.
Carmine Falcone?
Is it Falcone or Falcone?
Falcone.
Because in the Nolan stuff, they call him Falcone.
Yeah, it's Falcone.
Well,
that's
something
what
I remember
say.
Them saying when they did that movie, they actually asked some of the people at DC what it was, and they were told Falcone. So that's why they called him Falcone.
That's what
begins.
I'm saying.
Well, they played a prank on him, I think.
Well, if it was Falcone and Maroney, that sounds like some macaroni.
That's
that's
what I said, right?
No.
You can't say name.
You gotta make one sound different.
I think it is.
I've always said Falcone.
And should be Falcone.
Falcone, but, I mean, it also sounds like Corleone.
Yeah.
Like, that's the, you know.
Well, so.
He's also amazing.
Oh, my gosh. Colin Farrell is incredible.
Oh, no. I mean, John Turturro.
Oh, yeah. No, okay.
Yeah.
Both of them.
Yeah.
So.
But
anyway.
That makeup job, though, I mean, Colin Farrell really did sink deep into this character.
Yeah.
I remember
turning
to my dad during it. I was like, do you know who that is? He's like, no. I was like, it's Colin Farrell. He was like, what? I mean, so many people are going into this, and I questioned his casting immediately, but then I also trust in Reeves.
Trust,
that whole in Reeves we trust thing goes a long way, and I'm like, there's a reason why. And when I saw the movie, it was perfect. I mean, he just literally embodied that character.
When you saw that first picture, you knew why, Justin.
Well, I know, but I wanted to see it. I wanted to feel it. I wanted to, you know, take a bite out of it and taste it.
This is more of the Arkham Games Penguin. This version of the Penguin.
Definitely.
And I thought, you know, having him kind of be the second hand man, but like making the moves to be the man. Yeah.
They've been the Iceberg Lounge, which was from the 90s in the comics, but they've in Gotham they do it, in the Arkham games they do it.
It's a major point.
It's become now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that the Iceberg Lounge is the thing, and he runs that club and all that, and so they take those inspirations. But back to Falcone, though, and John Turturro.
Man.
I wrote in my written review, I'm like, this is one of the best things Turturro's ever done, and I love Turturro, especially his comedy stuff and his early work with the Coen brothers and all that, but man, like, he's good as Falcone.
Like, who was it in Begins? Oh, I
don't care. Remember that guy's name,
but you know that guy, right?
Well, Eric Roberts was Maroney, and Falcone was Tom Wilkinson.
Tom Wilkinson,
who just didn't have it. Like, he didn't have that.
He's good, but he didn't
thing.
Have that presence. Totoro does this thing that's more like Corleone,
yes.
right? It's that soft-spoken. It's that, like, you know this guy means business, but he's going to talk to you like a friend, and he's going to yeah. put the hand
when
on your shoulder.
Right before he stabs you
right before
throat.
He chokes
that's
you, yes.
Well, it's he's like, I'm threatening you, but I'm putting this under the guise of I'm not threatening you.
Right.
So you can just agree with me mm-hmm. and still have your dignity.
Yes.
But if you're, yes. you know, but if you're not going to go along, it's going to get ugly.
It's going
like,
to get ugly.
But we can put this this mm-hmm. lacquer on this that will allow you to pretend like you came to this decision on your own. I'm willing to give you that.
I like
much.
That.
When
yeah.
he and Pattinson have that one-on-one, when he starts telling Pattinson like oh, you know man. About his dad, and I was like, God dang, like this, and that's a thing out of the comics too.
Careful,
like,
boys, you got the Prince of Gotham
yeah.
right here. God, he's so good.
He's really
right.
good. But like that's another plot point from the comics is yeah. that Thomas Wayne saved the Roman's life, and I think that was in The Long Halloween or Dark Victory. It was in one of those two.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
But, yeah, the idea that, like, all of this could have been avoided had Thomas Wayne not been a good man and not lived by his code and mm-hmm. let him die, but he couldn't do it, right?
There's
and,
so much to unpack here in this.
I like the fact that Thomas Wayne is a little dirty.
Yeah, I
because kind of.
Because
that's
it's
like, ambiguous.
You don't, I mean, he made a deal with Roman.
He wanted him to take care of it, not take care
but
of
it. But he went
that's,
to a mob but, boss. What, you,
yeah. Like that
but I believe
feels like plausible deniability.
But in the movie
I said
when,
take care of it.
In the movie when
right.
I, meant there's two sides there's there's two sides to every story. And we get Falcone's story and we get Alfred's story. And yeah. so I really truly believe, even though I know each one is influenced by their own version, but I truly believe that Thomas Wayne like didn't know what to do, wanted to protect Martha, and he goes to the only guy that he
Why
knows.
Why did you say that name?
Because it's the name. So so he goes to the guy that can do something about it to protect his family.
Okay,
like,
but if you're going to a mobster and you don't want them to kill somebody, you say, but don't
hey,
kill
don't
them.
Kill that guy.
Help me. Rough him up if you need to.
Break a
but
couple fingers.
Don't kill him, guy whose job is killing people.
See, how I took it as him telling him to take care of it in a way, like, just talk to him. I'm offering him money.
Yeah.
Not ever indicating that he wanted him to actually harm the guy.
I hear you.
So he's going to do what he's going
to
do.
When you go to a mob boss,
right.
who had, like, a guy who gets, who is going to die.
You don't go to Burger King and order a Big Mac. Like,
actually, I think I have.
But you're not going to get one.
You're going to get a double
Where's
king.
Where's that special sauce? I know you got it back there somewhere.
I think it's fair to say that the character made the wrong choice, certainly. And I think desperate people do desperate things. And I think
sure.
for the story, I think that he made a very bad choice without actually wanting him to kill the guy. I really do.
I believe that he didn't want to kill the guy.
In retrospect, but, I think, yeah, duh. But I just
but I do
that's
agree.
Awful Pollyanna-ish to think that someone of his stature and like this is wasn't like a 19-year-old kid.
Yeah.
This was a guy who's savvy enough. He's running for mayor. He's and at the end of the day, you don't become a billionaire by being a nice guy.
Right.
Hard stop.
Right.
And like,
unless you're Thomas Wayne.
And so I'm glad that they removed. I'm glad they dirtied that up a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah,
I agree with the thought there, though.
Yeah.
Even if I don't agree with what his actual...
They give you enough to hang your hat on to where, like,
yes.
if you want to believe it,
thank you.
Okay.
You know who...
He didn't know.
I think the guy. I think the character you can get away with that with is Jonathan Kent. And, Jonathan Kent is the one, like, father figure that kind of needs to be infallible and, like, never did it, you know,
to
hardworking.
Set Superman on his path.
Right. You get.
He's also not a billionaire.
Also, he's a farmer.
Right.
You know, like, he's a working class guy who's just trying to raise this kid. But, yeah, like, I do like the idea that the Waynes forever, right, in all of comics, all of movies, all of animation are infallible. They're these
right.
godlike figures that Bruce is constantly trying
and we
to.
We don't live in an age where you can really believe that billionaires haven't done something kind of
exactly.
Like, you know,
right.
I think what Tom touched on, which is, I mean, the best part about this is that you still have enough there to, if you want to believe.
Yeah.
And he still set Batman on his path, right?
But
yeah.
You know, one of the subplots of this movie or underlying themes is privilege, right?
Yeah,
and,
big time.
And so, you know, so it's like he does come from privilege, and where did he get that privilege, and what was done to afford him that privilege?
Right.
Sure. I mean, Catwoman straight up says, I'm going to go after all the billionaires like the Waynes and blah, blah. And says, I think you'd be on their side.
And he was like, hey, how about we don't go after the Waynes?
I mean, not all of them.
Everybody else is fine.
That's a great line, though, to be talking to
and
him.
That's and that's the one thing we haven't touched on is Zoe Kravitz. And I think
I was going to just bring that up. Oh. Yeah. I think that it needs to be discussed.
I don't think you can touch on her.
No.
Channing Tatum will have none of that. Dad won't have any of that. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know.
They're dating.
Oh, who's her dad? Oh.
Jason Momoa.
That's what I was saying. Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, she's got two scary dads.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I wouldn't want to mess with either of them.
Returns is the movie that made me fall in love with Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah.
For, you know, because she was that Catwoman. She was the only.
Not Grease 2.
Not, well, anything at that point, you know, like we could talk about It Happened One Night or whatever, that, you know, the Fabulous Baker Boys. We can keep going.
Oh, Fabulous Baker Boys.
Scarface.
That's a good movie.
Yeah. But she was never like the comic book version. She was the Tim Burton Catwoman.
Right. Everybody in that movie is the most Tim Burton-iest Tim Burton.
Agreed.
Thing. And if you love Tim
That's
Burton.
That's true of any Tim Burton movie.
Batman.
Then, yeah. I mean, now they're not as much, but.
Like the first Batman seems.
Dumbo's not a Tim Burton-y Burton movie?
Yeah, it is.
He's come back around to it. But I mean, for a little bit, he was branching out. But the Batman Returns, every character, though. Like we're
Max Schreck.
But 89 feels does not feel like.
He's getting there.
He's getting there.
It feels different because John Peters.
Yeah.
Let's make that clear.
Yeah,
that's
fair.
Why that movie
that's
feels
fair.
A little bit more traditional action adventure Batman than Returns.
When it goes to
John
Return,
Peters
that is a
so
full blown Burton fest where it's like none other. And for it, for better or for worse. I mean, if that's your jam, good.
But Zoe Kravitz in this, I thought was the best Catwoman I've ever seen. Like
Phenomenal. She's
got the Frank Miller's. Like I said, she's wearing the same outfit that she wears when Bruce Wayne meets her for the first time in year one. She is bisexual.
Yeah.
You know, you've got her infiltrating the club. You've got her as the, here's this one of the spoilers. She's the daughter of Roman Falcone.
Which is hinted at in the comics, but never actually established.
Correct. And this is very much established that she
is
his daughter.
But that's pulled from another comic where she wonders,
from when in Rome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so this one's like, yep, that's the deal, which is another revealed
she
like,
gives the Roman his scars like on
it's
his
nice
face.
Though that have
that's
a,
long Halloween
yeah
it's
yeah.
Nice to have an actress who's third generation Hollywood preach to us about privilege though.
Isn't it nice?
That's fun. That's fun times. Yeah.
Wait, who's the first generation? Who's her grandfather?
Lenny Kravitz's mother was Helen on the Jeffersons.
Oh really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
And I guess her mother, you know,
yeah, Lisa Bonet.
Right. Yeah,
yeah.
You get a little bit of all,
but
coming,
you know,
from all
she's
sides,
an actor. She's got to deliver the lines.
Oh,
I mean,
it's
you know,
performance.
I get it.
I think it's worth pointing out.
I know that's. I mean,
I
that's
also,
part
like,
of a lot of actors that are preaching about anything. Where you're like, you don't really get. Like,
do you really understand? But I think her costume is great. I think that's kind of from the Nolan verse, is like the practicality or the real worldness of her costume.
Yeah, I like just making the cat ears out of a ski mask type thing.
I hated that.
I like that, again, when we talk about, like, we thought Nolan was grounded.
Yeah.
And again, prefaced, I love the Nolan movies, but I joked with someone else. I said, this movie makes the Nolan movies look like Batman Forever.
A little bit. It has its moments.
It's just so grounded. And that's hyperbole. But you know what I mean? It's this movie's so grounded when it comes to, like, he doesn't fly with putting his cape up and gliding around with something.
Like it's like a pack.
He has
his
a paragliding
suit.
Yeah. That's a real thing that they have. Right.
Right.
And so they make those little differences. And so that's why the Penguin doesn't look ridiculous. Right. He's not a caricature. He's a mob boss looking guy. Catwoman has like what could be perceived as little cat ears out of a hat that she has.
Yeah, she just doesn't pull it down all the way. That's the only difference.
There are little things in the movie like that to where you get the classic look of the
her
characters.
Her nails are real
long
nails, which I was like, all right, that's pretty dope.
Claws,
like,
it's
not claws.
Long nails being claws. But, like, Katie turned to me when we saw the movie, and she's like, I love how her nails are long, like they're claws,
right?
So it's little things like that. At the end, I noticed that when she's on the motorcycle, she has motorcycle gloves and the tips are
cut off
so the nails can stick out, which, of course, how else would you get
luckily, you had 4.5 minutes to look for that during the motorcycle.
I loved every freaking moment of them.
I did too.
They,
give me more of it.
At the end of the movie that we're just going to jump to now, not that we can't bounce around, but they go on this road and they part ways. Catwoman says, go with me. And she realizes he can't because he's spoken for by Gotham. And they go down the path. One takes a left, one takes a right. And Batman is certain he made the right choice that he has to make, but he still looks back in the rearview mirror.
Sure.
I mean, it's just
great
a
moment.
The it's long because you're supposed to
he's had so
live
many,
in it.
He's had so many relationships in the comics. I think there's, and I, you know, Talia, Zatanna, But the one that always comes back around,
the mayor's kid in the beginning, dressed like a ninja, like that was a great homage
To Bruce
Ra's al Ghul.
Oh, and sure.
The League of Assassins, like that's just the ninja costume with the big sword. I thought was a nice.
It was pretty good. But Catwoman is always the one that is
the closest.
We always have that. I think there's
until you watch Phantasm. I guess.
Boy. I guess that's true.
Oh yeah, no. Mask of the Phantasm. When you talk about relationships and Bruce being happy and thinking he can have a life outside of being the Batman, and then having to struggle with making the right choice. I mean, everything about that movie is brilliant.
Perfect movie.
If you haven't seen it, don't go. That's a cartoon movie, so it's some kind of kids'
movie. I saw
that
shit in theaters.
Yeah.
I saw it too. It was an empty theater opening night, but
cool
I was
with
there.
Me.
People, yeah.
But like, she is. She's a. I think they've never. We talk about perfect casting, right?
And chemistry.
That is
have
the other.
Have you ever
thing.
Seen chemistry between a Batman and any other actor as much as this movie? No. I mean, I think they nailed the chemistry.
Well, are they together, or were they together?
Not that I know.
Isn't that one of the rumors? They may have been together.
I don't know. I can't speak on that.
I think
but
there was a quote from the garbage train that they were together while filming.
They're two very good looking people. Two very good actors, and they have tons of chemistry, and I can't ever remember. I mean, I know that the stuff in Returns you could say is sexy or whatever. It's Michelle Pfeiffer in that suit. I'm not going to deny it.
That scene where they're like looking at each other's scars on the big couch, which is just the most ridiculous fireplace that would set, they would melt them. Like that fireplace was dumb. But yeah, we're like, he's like, where'd you get this one? And we're, and they both have to like make up lies because they've given each other their own scars.
Well, they don't actually talk about it. They just feel it and then they start.
Yeah, like, hey, Hawaii.
But like real sexual tension and chemistry in this movie. I think those two actors, I don't know, did you believe them together? I thought it was pretty good.
It was fine. I just wasn't like blown away by it. Like I was just,
So I think
that's the most powerful thing about her in the movie is that chemistry. See, I kind of, though I was blown away by the movie overall, she was the weakest link for me.
Oh, really?
I think she was fine. I think she was good in the role. She lacked a certain charisma and sensuality that I associate with Catwoman. She was sexy and beautiful, but there was something about when she's like walking through the club all like, powerful that came off as a little bit forced to me. Yeah. She's not really Catwoman yet. In this movie,
I was gonna say she's younger than the others.
Yeah, I mean, if he's in year two, right? We can assume maybe she's in like year one.
Yeah, so which is why I let a lot of that go and why I ended up enjoying her. But by no means am I going to jump on a bandwagon and say she's the greatest ever. For me, at least, no. Okay. Definitely not my
You
favorite.
Also like Batman Returns.
I love Batman Returns. I also liked Anne Hathaway's Catwoman, where I'm not really Catwoman in that movie.
I do too. That's the thing. People bag on Hathaway. I like Anne Hathaway. And
the costume's a little ridiculous, but
I Adrian Barbeau in the animated series. You got so many different versions to pick from.
Well, animated series is perfect every beat. I mean, every villain, every voice actor.
It gets a little wonky when there's an animation change, and then there's like
The first two seasons of Batman the animated series.
I don't really care for the New Adventures. Completely clear.
But
I
Batman
like
the animated
before.
Series seasons 1 and 2, which are that animation, Paul Dini, Bruce Timm, and Shirley Walker.
Oh,
for the score.
Oh yeah.
The Shirley orchestral Walker, the score.
The
every
knockoff
episode.
Of the Danny Elfman score.
Well, he wrote it. Well, he wrote the theme.
Yeah, he did the theme.
They
but
together on
we're
it.
Talking about the scoring.
Oh,
of each episode
during the episodes
is Shirley Walker, who was brilliant. I mean, that everything's perfect about that show. So it's hard to compare those, and they're also a different medium. So bringing things to real life.
Yeah.
But as far as bringing the comics and the shows and all the stuff we talked about to real life, I think they did a brilliant job with the costumes. Let's talk about the bat suit. We haven't really talked about that. I think it's one of the best bat suits we've seen live action.
I don't like that collar. I don't know why. Like, that collar bugs me.
I think it looks good in, like, in stills, and I know Justin had this problem. Like, in stills, you're like, I don't know. But, man, in live action, when you see him coming out of the shadows for the first time and then for the rest of the movie, the way he looks intimidating and the way the film is lit and just the cinematography of it all,
I
think it really works.
I don't like it.
Yeah, the suit overall, going into this, I was extremely disappointed when they first revealed it. I hated the cowl. To me, I'm not a fan of overly armored Batman. I like Batman to look like the classic look. Whether he's in rubber or not, I don't care. I just don't like him to look like he's Iron Man with a cowl. However, when I saw the movie, like you said perfectly, Kevin, the way he was lit, he was almost always in darkness or a shadow. So the cowl, while it looked a little bit fugly and awkward at certain angles, because there's so many close-ups of Batman in this movie, I swear there's probably more close-ups of Batman's face in this movie than any other Batman movie.
There's more close-ups in this movie of any character.
Well, for sure. But it seems to make sense.
Because like the way it's shot.
This is the most we've seen Batman interact with the world.
Yeah.
Like, right? Like, he's in a crime scene. There's dozens of cops around. I like when those cops are like, what up?
What are you gonna, one of my favorite lines of this movie is like, you're going to let him touch that? It's evidence. He's like,
he's wearing gloves.
He's got gloves on.
Yeah.
And I was like, what about chain of evidence? He's got gloves. But it's so under-delivered by Jeffrey Wright. He doesn't go, he's got gloves. He doesn't go, gloves. You know what I mean? It waits a beat, and then he's go, he's got gloves.
He's got gloves.
Let him do what he's going to do.
I thought that was a good line.
But,
I
like that line. Justin, continue with your bat suit story.
No, I mean, I started to fall in love with it. I mean, I already ordered the fucking Hot Toys action figure of the thing that I said 2 weeks ago I hated. You nailed it. When you see him come out of the shadows in the opening, it makes him so menacing. He's such a presence. And I loved those boots clinging as he walked like Spurs in a Western.
Yeah.
Oh, my
fair.
God. Absolutely adored it.
Katie turned to me when Batman comes out of the shadows to the Joker gang looking guys or whatever. And when Pattinson in the bat suit walks out like that, she turned to me and goes, holy like that first.
That was definitely the, like, you could hear like the, you could the rumble of the crowd, which I will say about the score is like, all right, there's a little bit of Elfman, right? You can hear it in the love theme when he and Catwoman are together on that roof.
I love
the
Catwoman
time,
theme.
There are hints of that. You can hear, there's some Hans Zimmer in there, and he has just found, and I think
Michael Giacchino. How do you say
it's Giacchino?
Giacchino. Okay.
The Elfman theme to me has always been the Batman theme, right? This is the
for like, us it always will.
And the I mean, the Hans Zimmer one, you know, didn't really have a theme, right? It was just
horns,
sort of, yeah, right? You know, but this is the one where I was like, well, they've got another theme because that's really good, you know. And it's,
Giacchino goes hard on this score,
goosebumps inducing in this movie.
I loved it. And the second time, I paid a lot more attention to the score. Like, I know Tom and I have talked before. Like, we're not huge score guys. But in this movie, the first time I enjoyed it. The second time, when I knew it was going to happen, you know, I didn't have to pay as much attention to the dialogue, knowing what was happening, and got to listen and got to look at all the little details. And that score is great when Catwoman first shows up, and it comes back when she's at that drug bust thing, you know, and they play her theme again. Like, every time she shows up, that score is really effective. And throughout the whole film, it was. I just wanted to bring up one thing that I haven't heard anyone else say that I can't shake. When I heard that score for the first time, the Batman theme, doesn't it sound like the Imperial March?
It does. I thought the same thing.
No one has said that yet.
I kept waiting for it to
segue. Actually, if you go on YouTube, Kevin, there's a couple of musicians that have already taken it and melded the theme.
I wanted to do a mashup. Yes, I've... yeah. Oh, okay.
I noticed that when I was looking for the soundtrack last week, which I've been listening to nonstop.
Yeah.
But I found that. I was like, oh my God. And it's literally very similar.
Send it to me if you have the link still. But,
for sure.
I love it. I think it's really good, but I couldn't get it out of my head that it wasn't going to go dun, 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 dun. It's just like there's a couple other notes missing.
I had the same thought.
Okay, but he uses it extremely effectively. The Batman theme, like the main theme that you can find on YouTube or buy, wherever you buy soundtrack.
It's available on CD.
There you go.
Apple Music and Spotify.
Yeah, so YouTube. but they bring it back throughout the entire film and keep bringing it back. Sometimes it's angry. Sometimes it's sad. Sometimes it punctuates the action of hits or that car chase.
That car chase was pretty
car
dope.
Chase.
I don't like the car
one
chase.
One of the best of
no.
all.
No.
What? It was edited within an inch of its life. I couldn't tell who was where in relation
interesting.
To what.
Oh, the fixed camera is so good.
All I could think the whole time was Tenet did it better.
Oh.
Interesting.
Yeah.
There's some really good car chases that I was thinking of that it kind of reminded me of.
I mean, it wants to be French Connection.
It very much wants to be French Connection.
There's French Connection.
It reminded me of that.
Yeah,
100%.
And then I was thinking like other good scenes like Children of Men when they're inside the car and looking around, which I know obviously pans more, but I'm thinking of good car chases from interesting angles. And this one is really interesting because the camera, it's pinned on the front of the Batmobile, it's pinned on the front of the Penguin's car. And so you see the action looking at their face, and these actors are doing the work. Like, you have to realize that if you're not just pulled back and looking at a bunch of cars driving.
Yeah, right,
if you're looking
right,
at their faces and you're experiencing the car chase by their reaction.
Well,
like
also
Speed Racer.
Just like, but also you got to think they're not moving.
Right.
Like those actors aren't
moving.
How
believable.
They just got stuff like going on the sides of them.
And
maybe.
How believable was it?
Yeah,
like,
no, I thought it was really good.
Penguin was excited, then he was scared, then he was angry. Come on. And then he's, you know, and at the end, when that, you know, you got that hero moment, I got you. Yeah, yeah. Right. And then he comes out of the flames. The score punctuates. And then Batman gets out with the spurs clanking.
Right.
And you see the fear then on Penguin's face, who's been so, you know, it is, in control.
The problem with the, I thought that scene was great. And I think him walking up to the car upside down is great.
I like that shot.
And then
lit with rain and
I didn't like where he bends over. I don't know why. I like when he's upside. I kind of want him just like,
because it's the, like in your head, you know, it looks.
I
cool
wanted him for, to grab him and pound.
That's what
him
I wanted. I want him to pull the door off and then pull him out of the car.
It's because when he bends over, like, it looks cool from that angle, but you know, from any other angle, it looks ridiculous.
It's funny because it's just like he's saying, like, hi.
Are you okay? But yeah, I wanted him to like pull him out of the car and put him up against the car.
Seek a bat. Yeah.
That's another moment where Kate turns to me. She's like, oh, hell yeah. Yeah. Like, it's cool.
But you guys, you got to mention, though, the Batmobile itself. Because I thought that thing was a beast. It was a monster, and I know so many fans were so against it when it was first revealed.
Because
it's just a muscle car with a jet engine, but it works so well here, and they present it. I think it's the first time for me since the Burton movies, even where the Batmobile really is like an animalistic thing. I liked the Tumbler.
The Tumbler's
really
not a Batmobile, though. The Tumbler's a tank.
It's a tank. Thanks, Frank Miller.
Their version of the Batmobile, so I never really got too deep with that. But
I get
this here. Feels like the Batmobile.
There's like a tank style thing at the end of the cult, right?
I have to reread that.
Like, and that's what it always reminded me of. Okay. And that
I always thought the Dark Knight Returns,
where it was like he pulls that out because there's like basically like martial law and war in the streets, and he needed something next level. But like, my problem with all the Batmobiles, I've never been a big Batmobile guy for any of them because they're all ridiculous. Like, you can you can't drive that on the street. Like, that's,
you don't come to comics for that.
But
yeah,
but
it's supposed
to be
cool,
like, but if you're
going to
give us a grounded Batman, then get, you know, then give us a realistic looking Batmobile. And,
so in this one,
and I like this one. Honestly, this might be my favorite Batmobile.
Like, I think look wise, 89 has just like a certain aesthetic to it.
It's cool looking as a toy.
Right.
And within that world, I guess it works, but it's like 30 feet long. Like, I mean,
good luck trying to maneuver a turn.
Yeah,
in that car.
Like, that's the Burton thing. You know, that's
you
where that...
your real superpower apparently is parallel parking.
But
he put backup cameras on his car before any of us.
Yes.
Yeah. But everything looks so cool in the Burton movies. And that's why it's like, you know, he's got his own aesthetic.
Yeah.
And I totally understand digging it. Because...
But I think this one, I agree. Like the souped up engine, the flame on the back.
When
like,
that thing revs up out of the dark,
the lights kick on.
Yeah.
When the first time we see it, it's that special Batman moment. It was the first time in the movie when I watched it for the first time where I was like, okay, this is a Batman movie. Yeah. I'm finally feeling like a kid where that inner child's coming out, where you hear the sound, you know what it is, and they tease it with the lights blinking.
Yeah.
It's an exciting moment. And even though this movie, I definitely would have to say, is not for children. I don't think this is a movie
hard
for kids.
PG-13.
Yeah.
But this is a moment where that inner child comes out like, this is a Batman movie, and it's an exciting moment for everybody. The whole theater roared, and I thought it was a perfect scene.
Yeah, I think kids would be bored to death.
I think that's probably true. Yeah.
Kid in the aisle in front of me got up and down probably about no less than 30 times at least. And he said, is this over? This is boring.
Yeah.
You could hear.
I had a family that took their daughter out because she was scared within the first 30 minutes. She was sitting right next to me. And she was scared by the opening. She was scared of Riddler. And she looked like she was 7. So, you know, parents beware.
I say this is a hard PG-13. And I think this is one of the more accurate ratings, to where it's like PG-13 means like probably around 12, 13. Seriously.
True.
And let's talk about the effective use of that PG-13. I think this movie, if you were told it was an R, you'd probably be like, yeah. I mean, it doesn't feel like a PG-13 movie is what I mean. There's no crutch there.
When the Riddler is smashing that dude's head in, I was like,
that was interesting. Your one F-bomb comes very early in.
I think it was smart.
I think it was trying to establish
that to fool people into not
thinking it's a harder movie than it is.
I was just about to say that. I loved it because the second time I really noticed it right at the beginning in the first crime scene when the commissioner says that, when Pete says that F-word.
What is it? Happy fucking Halloween.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Because my first thought was like, it comes so early. I'm like, do you get more now?
No.
Like, you're
the
one.
But in your mind, subconsciously, you're thinking like, we've got violence. We've got darkness. We've got murder. We have an F-bomb. Nothing about it screams PG-13.
Yeah.
So you go the whole movie subconsciously, not even thinking us, we're looking for things like blood. We know there's reasons right. why it's not R. But really, I don't think that it was missing anything by being PG-13, yeah. right? There's nothing in this not movie where you go, oh, I wish there was more blood, because Batman is hyper-violent, right?
Yeah.
Like, I
yeah.
mean, he's angry.
He's angry. Which is a different yeah. that scene. I wish they kind of hadn't shown it in the trailers, but I guess that they had to establish what kind of movie this is.
I didn't catch
is.
It. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, did you really never see the trailer?
Didn't.
Oh,
wow, that's I impressive. Was in the movie theater. You know, it came up when I was in a show, and I ignored it. So I mean, I saw it kind of
right.
In,
but like that scene when he grabs that guy by the arm and just waylays the crowd. That's the advantage of this suit, right? Is the Burton suit, the
it's
Clooney, the Burton suit, the Clooney suit, and the Kilmer suit, and even the first Bale suit are not practical right. to help them move.
Yeah, they're not. You're not able to do what you're able to do here.
Exactly.
This.
Exactly.
Dark Knight suit. I don't like the design of.
I hate that suit.
But as far as being grounded and realistic, like tactical
it's the
gear,
ugliest suit ever.
It is the worst.
But
suit.
But it's the most like armored, like a real person could maybe not get hurt if they were wearing it. Like yeah. it.
But even Bale, they never had Bale beating the out of a guy like we see here. Yeah. I mean, I think. You got to give some credit to what Snyder did with Affleck, because it was the first time we had seen in a long time where in Dawn of Justice, where Batman's literally
killing
people,
warehouse,
brutally
yeah.
oh. demolishing bad guys. And here they take note from that. We get this Batman. I mean, the dude's going to need reconstructive surgery after this. Yeah. I mean, he's pounding his skull right into the ground.
But
he never kills
anyone.
He doesn't kill a
and
single person.
And that's the problem. Snyder takes it too far. And that's what we all talked about with understanding the character. The Snyder movies were hard-hitting. That warehouse scene was badass.
He
but
pushed
when,
some people off the rigging.
Nope,
they
were all
they were
on
all,
wires.
They all had wires.
But someone got shot, though.
Were they?
Yeah, they were all hooked to wires.
See,
yeah.
They were smart.
But even then, like, if Batman does something like that, I'm like, okay. Like, you're that's self-defense. You're in
sure,
the you're
sure.
in the moment.
Right.
But,
right.
like, Batman to deliberately be like, I'm ending your life yeah. now.
Here, eat this
but
bomb.
But stab you in the fuck heart.
Yeah. Right. When Batman shoves that guy against the concrete wall and leaves a blood
yep.
splatter, he killed him.
Yeah.
And that's not
yeah.
Batman.
Yeah.
I
he
just,
has, when
I
he has guns on his ship or his, you know, I guess he has guns in the...
I just
he kills people
the first time he hasn't had any guns on anything. He's had guns on almost all of the on all of them, bombs or something.
Yeah, yeah, right. I honestly, there was a moment in this where I was like, I swear to God, if two little Gatling guns pop out of that car, because he does have like that's the thing is he does have some technology.
Let's
right?
talk about the gadgets.
I thought
he uses that grappling hook throughout the movie in a believable like it pops out. He
yeah.
uses it. I thought it was a great use of pulling people.
That
or going.
I have been saying for as long as I had a creative bone in my body. That Batman should have some sort of contact that is AI and linked to things where he can look at somebody and, be, and bring up their police record and see yeah. who they are. Scott Snyder did that in the new 52 Batman. And I thought, I'm like, this is brilliant. Yeah. Like, this is one of the coolest gadgets Batman could ever have. So the fact that he has that in this one, I was like, yes. That is one of the coolest gadgets Batman has ever had.
Yeah. So throughout the film, Batman and Selina Kyle use contact lenses, and they're able to either transmit the live video to Batman's computer, or he can like download it after
right.
it's been used. Because
right.
he says in his journal, "I need to remember," because it's important to him to understand why he's doing what he's doing, what he did, so he does not forget and lose sight, all that stuff. I
yeah.
love the psyche.
No, I think that's fantastic.
Into. So we see the contact lenses, you know, and we see how they're used. I think that's a good time to talk about like suspending disbelief in these movies. This movie's super grounded, but it's also still a comic book movie, right?
Yeah.
So you have to suspend certain disbelief to where that contact lens technology cannot exist. Like it
no.
just can't. It just can't. It's
well,
too thin.
Well, I mean, like, what can you like? Well, think about Google Glass, right?
I know, and it's a huge honking glasses with a camera sticking off the side.
That's true, but I mean, how long? You know what I mean? Like,
what I'm saying is that with current present day technology,
sure.
as grounded
okay.
as this movie is. That exact technology doesn't exist.
No.
Similar, it was the biggest stretch, I think, out of any of this stuff.
It's
really.
The most comic booky thing.
But that's where you go. This is billionaire Bruce Wayne, who has been perfecting and honing technology. He's a
Wayne
great
R&D.
He's a great detective, but he's also a genius, a scientist. You know, he knows technology. And so you
rich.
So you suspend your disbelief into thinking a contact lens can exist.
Well, I think the thing with the contact lens for me is that it's like just outside of our reach, right?
Right.
Like,
that's what I'm saying.
It's not so far advanced that it feels ludicrous.
Right.
It's not like put this chip in your brain and now like
right.
you can control the weather like that. You're just like, where did that come?
That's a flash villain. What are you doing?
Yeah, we're like this is like just a smidge mm-hmm. ahead of where we're at. That it's
it doesn't take you.
It
out
makes
of
it a comic book movie, yeah. But it also doesn't feel completely implausible.
Right. Right.
Because I think the next step, besides from, I mean, it's kind of part of gadgets, but is the hits that Batman takes from not only punches and pulls, but guns.
Know what kind of armor that dude's wearing?
But that's what I'm saying. To where you. If you're going to be grounded, you got to say, oh, a blast from a shotgun or even getting shot by a handgun at close range, you can't just walk around after that. And you have to say, well, he's Bruce Wayne. He has contact lens video cameras. He has some kind of impact resistant technology under the suit. That means when he gets, you know what I mean?
Here's what I will say about that.
Yeah.
Is I agree with you. Totally. There's a scene in this where he is turned off the lights in the arena, right? Oh, no, he's in the Iceberg Lounge where he kills the power. And these guys are firing.
Or he goes up to Falcone's suite.
That's a great looking
scene.
But he's fighting. It's lit by the gunfire, right?
He's
being shot with automatic rifles, right?
Yeah.
At almost point blank range. Yeah. And he's fighting his way through that. Then later in the movie, he takes a shotgun to the chest and he can't get up.
I mean, it's all unbelievable, just consistency.
That's all I'm saying.
But like, I do think a shotgun.
Knowing nothing about guns, I would think a shotgun blast would have more
impact
force than a
like
a
hit
bullet.
By a truck.
Yeah,
by one bullet.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree with that. But when in that scene in Falcone in the iceberg, he's getting shot a lot.
But if he has some kind of technology under his armor that lessens the impact, I think it'd be easier on smaller caliber bullets than the shotgun blast is so powerful.
Maybe.
I'm just talking about comic, fake technology, whatever. That's how I at least...
No, I was like, when he gets shot at the end, I was like, well...
Totally.
You did just get shot by a bunch of rifles.
What did he inject himself with? What was that green thing he injected himself with?
Venom.
Yeah. Adrenaline?
No, it's venom.
People think it's green. It's clearly like more than just adrenaline. In a real world, we think adrenaline. That's
right.
What I thought.
I just thought it was whatever Batman came up with, some kind of
formula. But it's venom.
Brad Hyland's like, ask Joe
because
if that's
venom. Because he goes crazy. Yeah, and it's Lazarus Pit.
Oh, really?
I mean, that's the deal. When you go into the Lazarus Pit and you come out crazy.
Right.
But also, when Bane injects himself with the venom, he goes mad,
which
like, for a second,
but the real world application.
I mean, he goes mad like for 2 seconds, beats the guy up, and then he's like.
But it's not a lot, right? Like when you look at Venom,
Venom, he's coming in like a backpack.
He's got injectors into his arm.
It's like he just came from a rave.
I like that. I didn't catch the first time. I think that's
the first time I saw it. I was like, well, that's interesting.
That's pretty cool.
And given, like, we should say, well, I'll briefly touch on most of this stuff.
Yeah,
the Riddler is an orphan. They don't call him Edward Nygma. It's Edward something
from the comics. Nashville. Yeah, that's his name in
right.
the comics.
They call him Ed. Yeah. You know,
and he eventually becomes Edward Nygma.
Correct.
So
Enigma. Yeah. Edward Nygma.
I love Jim Carrey's Riddler. I love it.
It's a very different Riddler.
Love it. It's different, but I love it.
It's
you
fine.
Know?
Yeah, we find
if you
out
cast
that
Jim Carrey, he plays Plastic Man. End of story.
Yeah. Done and done.
Failure from the start.
Yeah, absolutely. So. We find out that Thomas Wayne is running for mayor. Martha, who is an Arkham, has a history of mental illness. Mm-hmm. And then a reporter for not the Gotham Gazette, which I was like, well, that's a big mistake. I don't know why you didn't call it that, but all right. Is an Elliot. Mm-hmm. And we know that in the comics,
it would be Elliot's grandfather in the comics.
Is that what it is?
They used the name that was his grandfather.
Yeah. Thomas Elliot is going to reveal her mental history. Thomas Wayne goes to the Roman and says, can you shut that guy up? Yeah. And he's like, wink, wink, sure.
Yeah.
And they end up killing him. And then there across the screen is a giant like hush.
Because he was trying to quiet him. Hush.
Right.
Yeah.
So we know that Tommy Elliot, who is Bruce's friend in the comics, becomes this character Hush. And
Hush
I was
is
like,
great.
Hush is all right.
Hush
is all right
like
in the one
story. Yeah, yeah, no, the story, Hush, that's fine.
But then they were just like, this character's popular. We'll throw him in everything.
Yeah. I don't want to spoil it for people that haven't seen it, but I heard in the animated Hush, which I haven't seen, they change Hush.
It's not good.
But
the animated
version
is terrible.
Which kind of makes the Easter egg here more understandable because of Riddler's in the story. But I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. So, those are the two. Hush and the Court of Owls are kind of the two.
The first card he gets. So Riddler leaves behind cards for Batman, to the Batman at every crime scene. The first card they give him is an owl.
Yeah.
And then when you see those newsreels and how it looks creepy, like the Court of Owls, Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo stuff, I'm like, the Court of Owls would fit perfectly
in this
world.
So to me, that's what I would do next. Don't do the Joker. You can bring in, your district attorney is dead at this point. Mm-hmm. Bring in
Harvey Dent.
You've got a new commissioner. No, I guess you do, right?
What's that?
You've got a new commissioner, right?
Well, they've got to get one.
I guess
I don't know. They have one.
Appointed him.
Yeah. We didn't see it.
It will be Jim, shockingly
point,
enough.
Yeah.
So you've got, they've set this up. That's what I did. That's what I wanted to briefly say is that they give you all of these characters who you don't know, mm-hmm. right? So in the comics, you've got Chief Loeb, who was the commissioner at one point, and
in this movie, Pete, who's the commissioner at the beginning of the movie. Yeah. That guy's name is from the 66 Adam West series.
That's a deep cut.
Reeves is a huge 66 fan. Like, he grew up with it. He loves it.
And the cowl.
Yeah. Well, and the cowl with the stitching and the rounded nose, yeah. not a pointy nose. There is influence. So there are that phone that rings in Wayne Manor. I know it's not red, but like, he had a phone that looked like the one that...
Well, he still had a rotory phone.
Yeah.
He had the bus.
He did have the bust.
Statue that's in the background. Yeah. He doesn't pull it, but like, it's there. So Reeves is a huge fan. So you will find sprinkled throughout. So a name you wouldn't recognize top of your head, but that Pete name is 66.
So,
character.
But he looks like Commissioner Loeb from the Long Halloween stuff.
But he dead. Spoilers for everyone.
He's dead.
So we should just say real quick, the whole thing is Riddler is trying to take out corruption in Gotham City. So police officers are dirty cops are getting killed. DA is getting killed.
The mayor.
There's a fascinating story. Maybe I'll just post it on the site, but the collar bomb thing. Have you heard that's a real story?
Yeah. Have you not seen that? Have you not seen
oh,
that?
Oh my God.
Yeah. It's a whole documentary
on
Netflix.
I haven't. We didn't do an episode.
I read the article about it.
It's called Real Genius. You got to watch it.
Didn't we do an episode on 30 Minutes or Less?
I don't remember if we did an episode on
it. I haven't heard of it.
But it was
30 Minutes or Less is Jesse Eisenberg.
I've seen the movie.
It's based on that. Oh. Remember that he orders the pizza and he goes and delivers the pizza and they put the bomb around his neck.
Okay. Yeah. Well, anyway, I read a really good article.
Yeah.
I'll post it, but I'm
no, but you're absolutely right. There's a five part docuseries on Netflix.
It's absolutely bonkers.
Fascinating.
Okay. So
and fair warning, they show the bomb going off.
Oh, yeah. So you've got all these different pulls and inspirations from real life. But Joker, you know, you've got the Zodiac inspiration, obviously. And so Riddler is killing all these people, leaving cards for Batman. But he's basically trying to clean up Gotham. And at the end of the movie, Riddler's like, look at what we did. The last thing, the last piece of the puzzle.
I love the fact that, like, Riddler was basically manipulating Batman to do his footwork the whole time.
Right.
Like, I was like,
and what,
okay, that's...
The last clue that Riddler leaves is find the rat and bring him into the light.
Yeah,
and so
right,
Batman does just that, brings Falcone out. It's after Catwoman has already said that he's her father, that he didn't like really know about, but he hooked up with the mom, and so he's like, oh, crap. He tried to kill her, whatever. All that stuff happens. He brings him out, and then Riddler shoots him with a rifle from a building nearby.
Right.
And so Riddler played Batman, as smart and good of a detective as he is. He's like almost the world's greatest detective at this point, right?
Right.
So he's got some things to learn. And the fact that he manipulated him, and then the Riddler in his mind thought they were teammates.
He's giving Batman marching orders, and Batman's taking them like they're buddies.
That's exactly.
Because Riddler is only really stopping really bad guys, right?
Yeah.
But he's not doing it the right way, and not in a way Batman would ever condone. But that's the thing, though. Riddler's not just murdering randos. Like, these are
they
people.
They all have a point. Really, the thing is when Thomas Wayne was running for mayor, this Renew Gotham program was set up.
$1 billion fund.
And it was sitting there, right? The money was there. And then
Thomas died, no oversight.
Correct. When Thomas Wayne was killed, which is interesting because they never reference his mom, which I just think was interesting. They said when Thomas Wayne was murdered, they never say anything about Martha.
No, they do. I think
they don't. They only talk about his dad, which I do think is an interesting thing.
I thought it was just relevant to this, like, because they're talking about him as mayor, not that it never...
That could be, but I did think it was interesting that somebody was like, if Thomas Wayne was murdered in 2001, they were walking out of Shrek, not the Mask of Zorro.
Zorro the gay blade.
And apparently Gotham in 2001 has orphanages from the 40s,
correct.
Like
yes,
Uncharted.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah.
So this money was sitting there, and these people saw an opportunity.
The cops were getting into it. Maroni was getting into it. Falcone was getting into it. And Falcone wanted a bigger piece of the pie.
So they set up Maroni.
So he turned informant on Maroni, who had what's called drops. I like that they made their own drug.
Yeah.
It wasn't like coke or heroin. It's like drops, right? And they have the cool
drop heads.
The green onion looking guy that you see in the very the second
he's the robber
the convenience store. The convenience store was called Good Time Convenience Store, which is great because it's one of Pattinson's best roles. And Aaron reminded me of that from Feel and Film, so thank you.
Oh, smooth.
Yeah. So he sets up Maroni so that then Falcone can take over the drop operation.
Right.
And get the money from that and everything. And so really that's what this whole thing is about, is all these cops protecting Falcone. And in the end, we find out that Falcone is basically running the entire Gotham and has been for 20 years. And
he's
so
the mayor
at
of Gotham.
The end, he says, it doesn't matter who gets elected as mayor, Falcone's the mayor. He has been for 20 years.
Right.
And so, you know, it's all about that power play. And that's what the Riddler is trying to do with all this, is he's killing the corrupt people of Gotham, and whether they're the commissioner or
district attorney, the DA.
Yeah. What's that is Peter Sarsgaard.
It's one of them.
Sarsgaard.
But not part of the family.
I figured it out. Peter Sarsgaard is sorry he's not a Sarsgaard.
That is exactly right.
That's how you figure it out. So and he was really good in the movie, but all these people are corrupt. Riddler's taking them out, leaving clues for Batman. And one of the last people he tries to kill is Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
The sins of the father, something,
fall to
something.
The
to the sun.
Yeah.
And so that's...
I do also, that when they figure that out and Gordon turns to look and he's gone... Yeah. And I was like, all right, right on. And at least I get it once. That's
and
right.
I think editing-wise, that's a really cool scene where it throws you off because you think that it's real time when Alfred's opening the letter.
Yeah.
And then when Batman's trying to call home and it's like the housekeeper that answers.
It's, who was the housekeeper from 66?
Yeah.
Aunt Harriet.
Aunt Harriet.
It's homage.
I swear to God, I was praying so hard that her name was Harriet.
But that's the homage. It is supposed to be
Harriet. It is, for sure. Yeah.
He goes, something terrible is going to happen. Connect me. And I'm sorry, sir. It already has.
It already did.
And you see this as he's driving towards Wayne Tower, you see smoke. The way that they threw you off with the editing.
Yeah, I also like that Alfred was like, nah. And like you could see him throw it away. I was like, well, he survived that. Like,
this is the
Earth One.
Yeah. Alfred.
Alfred, yeah.
Andy Serkis was really good as Alfred.
Yeah. I mean, he's not in a lot, which I appreciate.
I can't wait to see more of him. Yeah. That's the only takeaway there. I liked what we got, and I understand why we had the other characters where they were in terms of focus. When he was there, he was good, and I'm looking forward to seeing more of that relationship.
Well, and I'll say about that, it's like the reason we don't see a lot of him is because we don't see a lot of Bruce Wayne. This is a Batman movie.
Yeah, we've always made jokes. We joked about Stallone in Judge Dredd, where he's constantly taking off his helmet. you see a lot more of the other, you know, Keaton and Bale, and although you see them, you know, hell, Keaton tears his own mask off at one point. Yeah. Where this
there are
one,
literally like three scenes with Bruce Wayne in this whole 3-hour
you
movie.
Get the funeral of the mayor. Mm-hmm. You get
him figuring out the ciphers with Alfred.
A little bit in the Batcave.
In the hospital.
And that's and those scenes aren't very long.
Yeah.
So it's...
Dare I say, not to cut you off there.
No.
Do we really even see Bruce Wayne in this movie?
That was my
takeaway. Because the diversity between the two personas for me was not there. My second viewing, I really started to understand that's really what he is. Yeah. He's so obsessed with this. This has taken him over entirely, where he even says the line, I don't care about that.
Right.
There is no Bruce Wayne in his mind. There really only is Batman.
Yeah.
When he's taking the cowl off, and even when you look at his mannerisms, the way he moves when he goes to the funeral service, he's still moving like Batman. There's no difference in the two people there yet.
Because
he
is
Batman.
We'll
see more of that in the sequel. Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
But in the other movies, there was always you put the mask on, totally different character.
Totally.
I think Affleck was the one that got, as much as I don't like those movies, Affleck is the one that got that the most right? When he walks into that server room and the gal's like, you know, he's doing the Batman thing and the gal walks in, he's like, I like your shoes. You know, he's very dopey and very like, you know.
Christian Bale's pretty good at throwing him off the scent with the Playboy stuff.
But he only does it once. He does it in that scene at the hotel where he jumps into the pool. Yeah.
That's a pretty good establishment.
No, I agree. But to your point, from there on, he's just Batman without a mask on. And this is the same way. Because
Bruce Wayne, the Playboy Bruce persona Wayne. Doesn't exist yet, right? He's only Batman.
Even when he goes
to
that funeral, he's just like, I guess I'll go. Whatever.
I'll be even over the here look on his face, the way he turns his head to look, it's all Batman.
Right.
You know? And I don't know if that was a distinct thing that he thought in his mind when he approached it in terms of performance, or if it was just all on the page. But it was a little jarring the first time because for me, I was like, wait, there is no Bruce Wayne here. But I understood it so much more watching it again that, dude, it's taken over every single second of his life. Yeah. So I really loved that obsessive nature about this version.
Yeah. And I think the last big thing is just the homage to the comics. I think, was it year one with the flood in Gotham City?
So there was
a flood storyline.
Aftermath. That's what Cataclysm were like the two back to back.
Yeah.
I thought it was in.
I don't think
one.
It's in one. It's in one or two. Like there was an actual storyline of Batman where Gotham floods.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It, like you know,
there's an earthquake, right?
Does I it, think yeah, because it was like there was something, and then it like caused the flood. Because then it was like a crossover event between all the different branches.
All
and
the
then,
different
and
bat
then
books.
There was like the aftermath of it wrapping.
I think
it
was.
Yeah.
I think it was Cataclysm and Aftermath or like the two. Big ones. You're okay. Right. There might be something in Earth 1.
I'm pretty sure Riddler does have something to do with it, but it's been a while. So anyway, Riddler's in Arkham. Like, they've got him. They've stopped this guy, but he's already set up vans around the city. They've got bombs in them. They blow the whole Gotham City floods. They go into Gotham Square Garden, like Joe said. And the big deal is, like, at this point, people really aren't sure of Batman. The police have been chasing him, all that stuff.
He's public enemy number one. But you've
got the whole Gotham City gathered trying to survive in the Square Garden, and you see Batman basically risk his own life to stop electrical wire that's hanging down from electrocuting everyone.
Yeah.
And you get that beautiful moment with the red lighting and the flare of the
blue
lights.
Flickering.
And
oh,
he's leading the people out, and then he's helping people evacuate on helicopters, and when that lady reaches up and grabs his hand, and like he could take her hand away, he could do whatever.
Yeah.
He actually embraces and puts his hand on hers to let her know it's going to be okay. And I think that's a symbolism of now the people understand Batman is the hero.
Right.
That's also a moment we've never seen in any of the movies.
No embrace
that's
like
what
that.
I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's a nice redirect for Batman, because the Batman, the dark and gritty Batman that everyone wants, was a reaction in the 70s when crime rates were soaring and everybody wanted a vigilante that would do the dirty work that the legal system couldn't do. And
Bill Kersey.
Yeah, and it's where you get Death Wish and Punisher and all that kind of stuff. And so we've basically been telling that story for years, and it's now in the aftermath of you know, the police force militarized and George Floyd's and Ferguson, like maybe you know, all of a sudden, like maybe that's not the best story to tell.
It's not.
And
in this movie, he starts off as that.
Right. They give you that for a movie, and then at the end, they kind of punctuate it by going, "Yeah, that might have been a bad idea." and so
it's
I'm interested to see how they move forward.
So here's the thing. Here's my fear. This is going to make massive money, right? It already has.
Yeah.
120 million opening is the projection for this weekend.
And we're coming out of a pandemic. Well, knock on wood.
Yeah.
We're working, you know, like things are starting to change a little
bit. Are you
afraid
that every DC movie is going to look like Batman again?
I am terrified. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I tweeted that when I saw it.
Now, granted, Aquaman is already in post. Yeah. The Flash is done. Black Adam
is
finished.
They've made changes after production in the past to their movies,
so,
right?
Like, yeah,
they've
so
done
that
this before.
I mean,
that
Joker coming out didn't change anything, and
what's
that made a lot of money too.
That's
so
true. Joker was dark and made $1 billion, and they didn't then say, "Oh, Shazam" or whatever. Like they didn't.
Yeah, but
to that.
To me, the that Joker movie is
so
a different,
its own
but,
thing.
But I will also say, Matt Reeves has been very vocal that this is not DCEU or whatever.
Right,
like it,
right,
you know,
right.
He's like, this is its own world, and the same with the Joker is its own world. So they can leave them separate.
Three spinoff shows.
I think
shows
DC and Warner Brothers has a good idea that they want to keep this diversity there in comparison to Marvel. And I'm not going to shit on Marvel. I've done that enough over the years on a constant basis. But those movies work for a lot of different reasons, but here it excites me a lot more to see filmmakers be getting free rein and creative control over something. And that's what we got here with the Batman. This is not a cookie cutter, paint by numbers, committee made movie. This is them letting an auteur make a movie about a character that they're very passionate about, give them a lot of money, and look at the end product.
Look at the Suicide Squad.
I would say it's a bold move because they tried that. Right. Mm-hmm. They tried that with Snyder. They tried that with David Ayer, and it failed. Sorry, it failed. So they bring in James Gunn to be like, hey, can you fix this? And he was like, I'll give it a go. And he fixed it. And that gets its spinoff TV show. They bring in Matt Reeves.
Suicide Squad was great. Peacemaker's great.
I did not know what to think of Peacemaker by episode two. I almost gave up on it.
No.
And I kept going, and I was like, all right,
isn't
this
it
works.
Great?
Yeah, this works.
So now you have the Batman, which is successful critically and with the fans. Financially, it's going to be. And it has three spinoffs.
So you've
you're
got
get the
Gotham,
Penguin.
Gotham Central.
Gotham PD. Yeah, is what they're going to call it.
It's Gotham Central.
Yeah.
The Arkham show.
And Penguin.
And then Penguin. So I think, like, I don't want to see Robin. Robin doesn't.
It's hard to pull off Robin in the present
day.
That's
what I'm saying.
You can't have a 14-year-old out there fighting crime.
Robin, like, either.
Which is why you got Chris O'Donnell as being in it.
Right. Like it's, and that's why after as much as they'll like strip mine the archives of Batman, they just can't find the path to Robin.
And I just want can't see a Robin movie. Standing next to Pattinson. I just don't, for yeah. me at least, in my mind, I don't see that. There are versions of Batman I could see a Robin next to. This
sure.
isn't one of them.
No, yeah. What about eventually a Nightwing? Wouldn't that
I would
be
love
cool?
to see it. But how do you get the Nightwing without a Robin?
No, like well, you have to tell it in the future. I just mean, yeah.
Or you do what they're doing and make it its own.
But Pattinson's young enough where they stick with this long enough. Maybe in 10 years you can see a Robin next to him. But I still don't know how you do it with
Terry McGinnis.
Yeah.
You get a Batman. And I don't want to see Superman. Like, I don't want to see anything else attached to this movie. Let this be its own thing. I don't know
how. And luckily, we're not going to.
Yeah. Hopefully not.
Very outspoken about that. So that's great.
Pattinson crushes this as Batman.
Yeah.
I think he's a great Batman. The haters have no room to speak anymore. Like, he's moved on way long ago. If you've watched Good Time, if you've watched
Harry Potter.
Yeah, no, that was first.
The Lighthouse.
But you've seen his work and you know he can do it. But this is the movie, and we said it. It's going to be big enough to finally prove that. And he's great.
Yeah. I think he's a great Batman.
There's a lot to like in this. I just wish it was tighter. Yeah. Like,
I could see that.
This is not a bad movie by any stretch of the imagination. I just wish it was tighter.
Sure.
Yeah. I also.
You do feel the length at times.
Yeah, I also will say about. There's another podcast I listen to called iFanboy. It's about comic books, and about 10 to 15 years ago, I wrote an email and said, I would really like to see a movie where the Riddler is like the Zodiac. And they were just like, no, that'll never happen.
Way.
It sounds terrible.
Do you have it? Did they answer it?
They did answer it. I have to find it somewhere.
Oh my God.
But it's so early. Like, it may have been one of their video shows. It was so early on. It must have been like 2000.
Please find it, though, where you exactly predicted what they were going to do.
And they said, no, it's a terrible idea.
And one of them is a writer on the Batman, which is weird.
Yeah, it would have been like 2006, 2007 when that happened, when I did that. But yeah, it got poo-pooed. And then when I saw this trailer, I was like, I called it. I knew it. So
that's awesome.
Yes.
So, well, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the virtual or the real table. Well, there's also a virtual aspect. You know what I mean. And everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett. And I have a written review of the Batman on ReviewSTL.com.
And Justin, where can people find you and your wares?
You can find Epic Film Guys on literally every podcast platform. We're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We did a spoiler-free episode on the Batman last week, and I'm proud to say that we're probably going to be doing an Epic Film Guys classic episode, spoiler-filled, with the old school EFG members this coming week. So be on the lookout for that.
Awesome. And you can find me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. Find the show online, facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, and of course, don't forget our Patreon. So that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Popeye kills Mulderick.
Getting ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice because we already warned you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.